This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to Ace time. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
Got him. Astros win it 6-4. They have taken the first two games from the Tigers. 8-5 last night, 6-4 tonight. And Blummer, the Astros continue to play great baseball here at Steichen Park.
There you go. There you go. And they continue to play baseball inside Daikin Park. Remember the end of the 2023 season where the home field was basically like going on the road? They couldn't win at home. They are playing really good baseball at home this year. Noteworthy for those of you thinking of spending an afternoon out there today. There's a good chance that you come away happy as they go for a sweep against what has been thus far the best team in the American League, at least record-wise, the Detroit Tigers. Good morning, everybody.
I'd like to see it. Yeah. Maybe they can show up. I'm going to be honest with you, Sean. Around about the sixth inning, I was sitting there just stewing in my own juices, thinking, oh, last night was great, but why is this such a boring baseball team?
Yeah.
Why? And then, boom, boom, they go ahead and
boom.
Score 6 runs.
They hit you with a barrage of non-home runs. Yes.
Sorry, Detroit. Are you not ready for Yiner Diaz?
Yeah.
And his soft contact RBIs?
That's it, man.
I guess not.
That's it. Thing that I liked about last night, by the way, welcome in everybody, Payne and Pendergast. How are you doing this morning, my friend? How you feeling?
I feel great.
Yeah.
I feel incredible.
Yeah.
I feel ready to go.
Same.
I want nothing but the big man lineup for, I'd say, 37 minutes tonight.
Oh, for the Rockets? Yeah.
Listen. The strategy for the Rockets has just got to be this. Yeah, I know you can't play the Adam Sengun lineup all the time, but there's a certain element of playing the Warriors where you just got to pray to the basketball gods that the threes don't drain. So just do that.
Yeah.
Just be pious as hell. It's an oxymoron. All day long, and just play your big men, eliminate the paint, and just pray. Pray that they don't hit their threes.
Well, whatever the game plan, this is an elimination game. Like, so this is truly Steven Adams, because I think some of the element of them, you know, playing the big man lineup for just spurts is Steven Adams probably can't go 35 minutes a night, you know?
Shoot him up!
That's what I'm saying. Like, this is an all-hands-on-deck situation.
That's right. I can imagine the doctor, because they have to write scripts for all this stuff. You know, it's not the old Wild West where doctors are just in there with a burglar mask and two syringes, one in each hand, shooting people up.
Yeah.
But the script would be, healed. Yeah.
Healed.
Yeah. No, he old.
Oh, he old. They said healed. Yeah. Like Buddy Healed. I'm like, what about Buddy Healed? He old.
Well, you just pull a Tanya Harding on Buddy Healed.
Yeah. A Gilluli. So we'll get to the Rockets. But the Astros last night, that was good. This was the second straight game where they fell behind in this game, 2-0. And this was a week ago. 2 weeks ago, really at any point in the season up until this series for the most part. And if they fell behind 2-0, they fell behind 2-0 to the Royals twice over the weekend, and those games ended, wait for it, 2-0. So this was good to see them kind of, you know, midway, late in the game, A, bounce back and take a lead in this game, and B, pile on a few extra runs, which they actually needed last night because Josh Hader came in and did his 2024 act. Coming in a game where they're up four runs and he gives up a two-run homer.
I'm at the point this season, especially because the pitchers have been the salvation for the Astros so far, that I'm like, I just kept reminding myself, that's all right, man, he's been cool.
He's been awesome.
We're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is just, I do feel, it's one of the weirder things in baseball. I do feel sympathy for closers who come in non-save situations, because those guys are just wired to be raging bulls. And you come in this situation where you don't have to be a raging bull.
Yeah.
And you can, I think it feels, and I know it's not the case, but it feels like 95% of the time they turn into Ferdinand the Bull because they're just they're not familiar with this situation.
Yeah.
But he figured it out.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Well, Josh Hader's probably the only one sitting out there in the bullpen hoping that they don't score more insurance runs. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You get paid based on saves. Like, they measure you based on saves. You know, like, that's your value to the team. You come in with a 3-run lead, it's a save situation. You come in with a 4-run lead, and you're basically just playing out the string there. So I was a little surprised they used him with a 4-run lead, given they've got a day game today. You know, like, did they need to use Josh Hader last night up 6-2 in the ninth inning? You know what I mean? Like, I'm guessing Hader is not available today, probably.
Yeah, I think they're just, I would imagine not. They're just pacing him out. I think that you get to the spots in the schedule where you feel all right and you just want to keep him sharp.
All right,
so,
yeah, maybe.
Yeah, and you're also facing the tie. Like, I know it's a non-save situation, but it's almost like, all right, there's some teams where a 4-run non-save situation is different than other teams with a 4-run non-save situation.
Yeah, maybe so.
Have some respect for the opponent.
Maybe
so. Know?
I guess so.
Sorry, I like AJ Hinch, Sean. I didn't realize you thought he was a bum.
No, was a bum.
I appreciate everything that he did for this organization.
They're a kind of a mirror image of the Astros. It's not a great offensive team, so... It's neither here nor there. And maybe he is available today. I don't know. I haven't looked at what his workload's been the last few days, so maybe he is available today, too. Who knows?
The gusto, I think, was another big positive development is that he was really, really struggling in the first.
Yeah.
And the first, if you guys missed the beginning of the game, Kerry Carpenter's up at the plate. He gets hit in the foot. The ump misses it. Kerry Carpenter is furious. The A.J. Hinch says, listen, you getting on first base is fine and all, but as Sean Pendergast mentioned, we're not the best offensively right now.
Right.
So they don't challenge it, and it clearly would have been overturned. And then Kerry Carpenter hits a home run.
Yeah, no, I know it was pretty funny because Callis's call. I think we're going to see if we have it here. Callis's call was pretty funny on that because as the ball sailing into the right field bleachers. He's like, we don't have it, Ben. Okay. Literally as the ball sailing to the right field bleachers, like, well, probably would have been better off getting hit by the pitch right there. Might have been better than this solo home run we're about to give up on the first batter of the game. It was good.
I've always been a little bit surprised that somebody who was born well after Kerry Carpenter, the singer, died, was named Kerry Carpenter.
Yes.
I don't, you know, like your last name's Carpenter. Surely you've heard of Kerry Carpenter.
I think it was Karen Carpenter.
Oh, I think it was close enough.
Maybe her friends called her Carrie. I don't know.
I would stay away from any of the Karen the or Carrie derivations after Kerry Carpenter.
Same way we want the Texans to stay away from Jalen's and Jaden's for the next couple of drafts. That would be good.
Yeah.
So the Astros win last night. They go for the sweep today, and they're a hot baseball team right now, man. Things are starting to straighten themselves out here much earlier than last year. I see all these numbers from last year, and as kind of boring is the best word to put it. As boring as this team has felt for most of the year, they are 16-13 right now. We probably should have bumped in with the celebration song. They're 3 games above 500 for the first time this season. Thank you, Ben. Probably should have bumped in with that. 3 games above 500, baby.
3 games above 500, 1 game back of the Mariners in the division. The
best
teams, the best teams in the AL right now are the Tigers at 18-12.
Yeah. Who? Oh, the team whose ass has gotten whooped the last two nights.
Yeah, and I'll remind you, for those of you who have forgotten, the Astros are 16-13. And the Yankees are 18-12 as well. So the very, very best, the cream of the crop in the AL, both of them only have 2 more wins than the Astros right now.
If the season ended today, the Astros would be sitting on a wild card round series with the Cleveland Guardians. Yeah. Both 16-13.
I'll tell you what, credit to the A's, scrappy underdogs that they are, playing in a single A park somewhere in Northern California.
15 right now. Look at that.
Yeah, they're 2.5 games back from the Mariners right now. The AL West is all gumbled up.
And the Angels, I guess that 7-3 start by the Angels was a little phony. I'm just looking at the standings right now. They're 12-16.
Even checked in on the Angels in a while.
Remember that? Remember back in the day in the first week of the season, like, oh, the Angels, Mike Trout. Oh, he's hit 5 home runs. They might have something. 12-16. They suck and always will suck. Sorry, Artie Moreno. So that was good last night, man. Good to see. excitement level, nervousness level. How are we feeling about this Rockets game tonight, my friend?
Let's see what happens. That's where I am with them. I'm in a let's see what happens mode, and I'm trying like hell not to be dried up emotionally on the inside, and yet I'm fighting against it. Mm-hmm. So I'm just waiting for them to do something that shows me, hey, all right, you know what? Those blowhards, Payne and Pendergast, they were just way too down in the dumps. What a couple of haters.
Yeah.
No, I can't believe those bums were acting like Jalen Green isn't one of the best basketball players who ever lived just because he routinely scores single digits in the playoffs. I want to be proven wrong tonight, Sean.
The Jalen Green contingent that you talked about yesterday, the very vocal Jalen Green, I have not seen them this series, at least recently. Like the hardcore Jalen Green supporters have kind of Homer Simpson their way into the hedges. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Right now, it's hard. His performance, that goes to show you. Like, if you just put your hand over the rest of the series and just looked at game two where he scored 38 points and he was incredible, if someone had told you just looking at that game out of these four games, like, oh, no, everybody's very angry with him over the rest of this series, you'd be like, God, he must have had to have been terrible for those other three games. And the answer would be yes. He's been god-awful those other three games.
Yeah, and you know, yesterday we spent a lot of time saying that, because one of our listeners had said that he's like a James Harden Jr. or something in the playoffs. And we said, look, that's actually very, very disrespectful to James Harden, because despite all James Harden's flaws in the playoffs, particularly in games 5 through 7, Jalen Green hasn't even come close to looking anything like James Harden in a single series here so far.
Yeah.
Including that 38-point game. Yeah, that was a great game. But the James Harden, when he was with the Rockets, never once in a playoff game scored in the single digits. And then last, you know, James Harden would also, he would at least do us the honor of, in his awful, awful playoff games, the turnovers would be in the fourth quarter instead of right in the first quarter on the first four possessions.
First three possessions of the game. Yeah.
So, and then James Harden goes out and has a classic bad James Harden playoffs game last night. And Jalen Green is still much, 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 much worse than James Harden in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's a clunky comparison because he only played four games. You know, Harden's been around for 13 years. That'll be interesting to see if Ime Udoka does anything different tonight. If he, you know, look, undeniably the best basketball has been played for this team when Steven Adams has been on the floor. The thing is, Steven Adams, the ceiling of the time that he's been on the floor is around 20 minutes. So do you go, like, if it's working? If it's not working, then you figure something else out in game. But that's what's worked best in this series so far, and it's really not even close, is having the two bigs out there together.
If you have to be careful and judicious with his minutes, but you can at least use the lineup more aggressively, perhaps.
Yeah.
And just indulge. Because if you did, honestly, and I was joking earlier about, you know, spending 40 minutes in that. But if you do it all the time, the Warriors are going to take advantage of it, and they're going to start just destroying you with threes.
No, you got to chess move it. But like in the fourth quarter, like I was hoping. Well, we can talk about it. There's a lot to unpack with that game that we'll get into. We'll talk plenty about the Rockets today. Jalen Green is taking some around the country too. The critics are out for Jalen Green. That we'll get to that as well. The critics for the Texans draft class, I think overall, not, you know, I think overall people pretty happy with it. The critics, again, pretty happy with it. What are the biggest issues? A few days later here, what are the biggest issues that we're hearing that people have right now with the Texans draft class? And more news out of North Carolina yesterday, at least more activity with Bill Belichick and the North Carolina Tar Heels social media director and girlfriend. We'll get to that all coming up next. Stay there. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. Rockets tonight. Well, top of the hour, we'll get to what are they saying about Jalen Green. Jalen Green's been a big topic nationally. What are they saying? Is the criticism valid? Is it fair? Kenny Smith even had advice for Jalen Green. It was pretty good. We'll get to that at 7 o'clock today. We'll do headlines at 6:45. You can text the show, 713-572-4610. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. A texter points out before we get into the Texans and the leftover breadcrumbs from the draft talk this week, someone said that, and I've lost the text because we're getting buried under Rockets and Astro and Texan text. Someone said something to the effect of, nobody's talking about these torpedo bats anymore. That was an interesting 15 minutes of fame that they had.
Right. I can't even remember. It was sometime in the last few days, an opponent for the Astros, the bat broke and it rocketed straight back toward, like, it broke at the lower part of the bat, and the barrel of the bat rocketed towards the screen. And if it had hit right, could have gone straight through the netting and into somebody's eye. And it looked like, I was trying to look, it looked like it was a torpedo bat.
Okay, yeah.
I felt like that was a good metaphor for what's happened to the torpedo bat.
Yes, yes.
Over the last few
Shattered
weeks.
In yeah. half. Yes, yeah.
Right, right. They have improved offensively somewhat, at least a little bit. Hey, Yiner's not using one. Dubon.
Is anybody other than Dubon using one that we know of? He was the only one that
not
I heard.
Not that I know of. Yeah.
He was the only one that I heard.
Pretty much an afterthought.
Yeah. Well, I saw people asking, like, why aren't people talking about the torpedo bats anymore? Because the Yankees didn't hit 9 home runs in a game since they did back in late March in opening weekend.
Listen. Yeah. A lot of baseball writers like to act like they're the guardians of actual serious sports writing anymore, and they're the real true journalists. They were using torpedo bats last year,
right?
And these guys were all asleep at the switch. So it took that huge deluge of torpedo bat by the Yankees in that one game for your vaunted baseball writers to even be clued in on the existence of the torpedo
bat. That's right. That's right. So biggest issues with this Texans draft class. We've talked a lot about the positives of the class, and I think overall the feedback is I would say skews positive. There's certainly graders out there this draft that have issues with it. It's hard to have a really elite grade on a draft when you're not in the first round. The Texans traded out of the first round. I would say the biggest anything offensive line is what's going to move people this offseason, I think, Seth, just because the Texans themselves, by their behavior as a team, have shown that, yeah, we realize the offensive line was a major issue last year. So we're all in agreement, team, even if they're not saying it outwardly, team and fans and media, that the offensive line was a big issue last year. That's not breaking news. The question is, did they do enough to make people feel good about where the offensive line either is or is going right now? And I guess the biggest criticism is, the interior was the jankier part of the offensive line last year.
Yeah.
And they didn't do anything in the draft unless Ursary becomes a guard, which I'm not expecting. They didn't do anything in the draft to address the interior of the offensive line.
Right. Yeah. And the other than the rumors that they were, you know, very interested in Tyler Booker or Donovan Jackson, the two guys that went before the Texans picked in the second round, as well as Gray Zabel. So like all of those three guards that were really intriguing were gone before the Texans picked. I think I guess the part where some people are torn is whether the Texans should have been more aggressive in trying to trade up for them. I'm cool with the Texans not overspending for an interior offensive lineman in the first round, because I don't think any of them were slam dunk, oh yeah, this is the kind of interior offensive lineman that should go in the first half of the first round. So I think even if the trade value was correct, it would have felt a little bit like reaching for best player or like drafting for need instead of just kind of taking it as it comes to you. So I'm cool with it. But as we saw yesterday, the Astros pick up an offensive lineman off of waivers, Jake Andrews.
The Texans, sorry. Yeah, you said the Astros.
They did too. The Texans picked up an offensive lineman off of waivers, Jake Andrews, who was a high fourth round pick for the Patriots a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And it's not something to get overly excited about, but I think it's just evidence that they're going to keep bringing in competition. And I believe Andrews would have played for Cole Popovich at Troy State. So there's a little.
Oh, is that where he went?
There.
Is that where he went? Okay, yeah. I had just seen that he'd gotten on the field in 23, and he missed all of last season. Am I right about that?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And he had a torn meniscus. He was early in the fourth round draft selection in 2023. Yeah. And you just think, okay, the upside might be that it's a guy that was injured all of last year. Cole Popovich has a connection to him. And the Patriots, as teams with new coaching staffs do, sometimes they're just kind of rotating guys that they want in and what have you.
Yep.
So it doesn't mean that all of a sudden Juice Scruggs is getting cut because of Jake Andrews or anything, but they're gonna keep trying to bring in competition here.
Yes, yeah. If guys are available, they'll find them. Here's Nick Caserio following the draft on the team, not landing a guard in this draft.
Yeah, well, look at what the opportunities are. I mean, again, offensive linemen come in different sizes. You have guards only, you have center only, you have tackle only, you have tackles that can play guard that can play tackle. So, I mean, like, honestly, like, the more you can prove, like we talked about, like, Titus never played guard before. So, and we didn't know how good he was going to be until he went in there. And honestly, he's played at a pretty competitive level. So, I mean, there's no, like, list that says we need to go find a guard like we talked about last night. I mean, if someone can tell me, like, what a need is or what drafting for need or what finding a specific player. I mean, if you play one spot, you better be really good at it. If you play multiple spots, it creates more opportunities for you. And we'll put the five best guys out there, like, whenever we need to play in September.
Okay, I think this is where I think people get a little bit frustrated with Caserio at times, because that's a little bit Southern Bellish. The like, I don't even know what that means. Drafting for need. And you're looking around like, it's like you've got a need on your team, and you draft a guy to fill that
need. He said that exact thing a couple times during draft weekend.
I think most GMs look at drafting for need. It would mean that you're also reaching for guys, and I get that. If you routinely say, well, this guy's really a late second round caliber guy, but we're going to take him at the top of the second round because we need this guy, then you're ignoring all of the randomness of the draft. And then if you get in the habit of doing that, then you end up really overdrafting a lot of people. I think that you still come out of this draft where the other Southern Bell part of it is where Caserio has said in the past, it's a narrative that the offensive line isn't playing well. Mm-hmm. They're just fine. Mm-hmm. There's other people too. And then you get rid of the three of your starters from last year.
Right after the
season. You fire the offensive coordinator. Yeah.
Yep.
So, and then lo and behold, going into the draft, hey, all the idiot pundits and us fans are saying, boy, their real big needs are at offensive line and wide receiver. And then lo and behold, you take two wide receivers and an offensive lineman with your first
three
picks
in the draft. It's quite the coincidence. Yeah.
I don't know why, but I would think that we need offensive lineman and receiver. Oh, those fellas?
Yeah.
Those that they just happen to be the guys we took? Mm-hmm. Where they took? Oh, you're silly. You're silly.
Do you think if they had taken, I love the music. If they had taken Tate Ratledge instead of Ariante Ursary, Ratledge went like 9 picks later to somebody. I can't remember what team drafted. Tate Ratledge is the guard. Tate Ratledge is the guard out of Georgia that loves to kill things. Got a mullet, loves to hunt, you know, wears a lot of camo.
Right. And he's also got
played in the SEC.
Yeah, he's got a sweet mustache.
Too. Yeah.
People really like that mustache.
I don't think people are down on Ursary, but I do think people are concerned about the lack of interior O-line help.
Well, this is the thing. Ratledge ended up going to the Lions.
That's what it was.
Lions have drafted incredibly well over the last couple
years. They've had a really good offensive line, too. You know,
half their starters have come from the last few drafts.
Yeah.
And they've got a really, they coached their offensive line up really well. They were a much better offensive line than the Texans last year.
Yeah.
So I think that's where, if you look at the Texans moved up to 16. From where? From
16th in the round, in the 16th in the second round.
The
They moved up from 58 to 48.
Right. So Tate Ratledge goes at 57.
Yeah.
So you look at, okay, man, the Lions ended up getting a guard that a lot of people really like. The Lions have been good with their offensive line. But the Texans just simply liked Ursary better. That is, I think if the Texans were drafting specifically for need, they would have taken one of these guards in the second round more so than trading up for Ursary.
Yep.
So they liked Ursary and was higher on their board than Tate Ratledge. If the Texans had taken Ratledge with the 16th pick in the second round, then I think people would have been more bullish about that just because they know he's more of a household name too because he played at Georgia.
We got to touch on this Jordan Hudson, Bill Belichick thing going on in North Carolina right now.
Yes.
Bill Belichick's girlfriend, who runs social media for the North Carolina football program and who reportedly was just a menace during his 60 Minutes, his CBS Sunday morning interview, was interrupting it repeatedly, left the room for 30 minutes at one point while the interview was being recorded. This was an interview that was supposed to be to promote Bill Belichick's book, and it turned into the interviewer asking about their relationship. She took great umbrage with that. And it was a circus, and all the reports out of North Carolina are that this is indicative of how it's been with her behind the scenes. This is just the latest story of what's been going on with
her. She comes off as a lot of people, Sean, that I know you have seen, the PR rep for an athlete. Sometimes you're in an interview with an athlete, And kind of the old give and take in the deal is that, yeah, you have an interview, you're there, they're there to promote something, but you just have conversation about stuff. And along the way, you sprinkle in some promotions of the book. But sometimes these PR people are like, no, talk about the book. Talk about the book right now. No, talk about the book.
Yeah.
And it's really annoying.
Yes.
It's really annoying. And they do a disservice to the athletes and coaches.
Well,
because it makes the coach or the athlete look like a pain in the ass.
Right. And she's like the worst version of that, according to all these reports.
Yeah.
And so she yesterday on her Instagram with Taylor Swift's Look What You Made Me Do playing underneath it. She put music on this post. She posted a copy of an email that was reportedly sent by Belichick to everybody involved with this whole project, like this promotion of the book, including the book, the publishers and the PR people and everything else, that was outlining all of Belichick's concerns with doing interviews like this.
Right.
That a few people who know Belichick a little bit, like Albert Breer, picked out little nuggets. They did sort of the forensics on the email, and they're like, no, Belichick didn't write this.
No, 100%.
He would never say this, this, or this.
He would never say this, and he wouldn't do some of the, like, the frankly idiotic, just the basic composition and use of the English language stuff that was done in this email.
Yeah.
And, honestly, her posting this email with the Taylor Swift song playing underneath it is just incredibly hilarious because this was not a good look. And she's acting like, here, boom. I'm doxing myself.
Yeah. Well, she promised to, in this post, full statement coming later today. So I sat there with a big bucket of popcorn all day looking at my computer waiting for this full statement to come up. Ted and I even texted last night because Ted is waiting like I am for this full statement.
Ted Johnson.
Ted Johnson, former colleague, former Patriot that played for Belichick. And this is a huge topic up there, as you can well imagine.
What's your biggest thing from this that made you feel that, okay, this is coming from Jordan Hudson?
I would say that they called, well, one, like the little thing is that he called it the title to the article, not the headline to the article. You know, just like.
She's almost as if, that
Belichick knows it's a headline, not a title, you know.
They were arguing with the article that they were addressing in this, the headline was, I bleeped up, I effed up, talking about a mistake in the Super Bowl.
Yes.
And that all the, listen, this is about him and this is a story about him. This book is about him winning 5 Super Bowls, this, that, the other thing. And then saying that we need to try to have control of the headlines with some of these articles. And again, this is like a rookie PR person that just doesn't understand the way media works. There's no way in hell Belichick wrote this.
The other part too in here, Seth, that I look at this and by the way, just to put a bow on it, the statement that she was promising after this has not come out yet.
Yeah.
I'm guessing somebody put a muzzle on her and said, look, stop. It might be Belichick himself, like who's starting to hear things from people like, hey, Bill, this is a bad look for you. I would say the other thing in this email, and again, this email is reportedly, it's signed BB at the end. So it's reportedly, it's portrayed as being by her as being from Belichick. I think it's from her going, telling all these people, all the PR people, this is how it's going to be. The part where it says, as the leader of an organization that grew from a $500 million franchise to an $8 billion organization that played in 10 and won 6 Super Bowls over 25 years. First of all, the $8 billion organization, do we know that that's what they're worth? Like, that's the highest an NFL team has gone for is 6 right now.
And it does not sound like anything Belichick at all would have focused on.
Yeah.
That, like, hey, we increased the valuation of this company.
He didn't mention Robert Kraft at all in the book. Why does he care about the value of the organization?
Yeah. Then we want this to be the focus of the interviews. Like, that's just the other part that annoyed me, first and foremost, was, and this is a classic young person that doesn't know how business and such works.
Yeah.
The email is in bold blue font.
Yes.
You psychotic weirdo. What the hell are you doing?
Yes. Like, you know
this
what? That's
very, very serious email that you're sending to the team is in bold blue font. What are you doing?
That's a horrible job by me. That should have been the answer to your question. What was the dead giveaway?
I knew as soon as I saw it. I was like, what the hell is this?
What was the dead giveaway? Like, Belichick even knows how to change a font on his email. Oh, man, that's funny. All right.
The other thing, too, was Belichick in this letter used the term clickbait. talking about there's no way in hell Belichick knows what clickbait is.
Yeah, there's a lot.
I don't think there's a chance in hell. If there is, there's no way he'd actually use it.
Dude, I need this statement to come out, though. I've been waiting almost 24 hours for this damn statement from her.
You know what I also liked is that she or he did the equivalent of air quotes when you're not supposed to use air quotes.
Would she use it?
She said, we can expect that the interviews and podcasts with quotes around them that will supposedly drive the sales will also come from similar samples such as this.
They are interviews and podcasts. Yeah, that Belichick didn't write this thing. All right.
He's got to get rid of her, man.
No, he doesn't. Stop it.
Bill Belichick, this is not what your legacy needs to be, Bill Belichick.
It's the best thing that's ever happened to us and him. No, don't dump her, Bill. Please don't.
I need a horrible docudrama on Lifetime to come out about this that paints her as the hero. It needs to specifically make it look like I was taken in by this older man and he put me in a position.
Hey, real quick,
I wasn't ready to do.
Real quick, and Ben, I promise, real quick. You know the picture of Belichick holding her up with his legs, like her in the Titanic pose? On her feet, like as a pedestal.
Like she's an airplane, like you do with a kid.
Yeah.
When you get on your back and you put the kid on your feet and you lift them up.
Did you happen to see the video of that surface? Not the still shot, because the still shot looks like, wow, Belichick's in good shape. He's holding her up there. Look at that. The still shot, he is shaking like Mr. Burns would be shaking, trying to hold her up. The legs are shaking. I'll send you the video. The legs are shaking and the arms are shaking. I'm like, oh my God, this is so sad right now.
That's too bad, though, because, you know, he kind of does have the physique of a lot of those male college
He's very barrel-chested. Like He's barrel-chested, like he can still...
but a lot of times, those guys are beefy but kind of dumpy, too. You know? A lot of them are jacked, but some of them are kind of dumpy but still strong. That's Belichick.
Headlines. Astros, Rockets, Texans make a move. We've got some headlines for you coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
Got him. Astros win it 6-4. They have taken the first two games from the Tigers. 8-5 last night, 6-4 tonight. And Blummer, the Astros continue to play great baseball here at Steichen Park.
6-4, the final score, as you heard Todd Callis say right there on the call, Space City Home Network. And the Astros, 16-13 on the season now, game back in Seattle. They'd be a playoff team if the season ended today. For as bad as the offense has been, they are 16-13, and they are in a way better spot this time this year than they were this time last year. This time last year, they still weren't even at the point where they were 12-24 yet on the season. We're 29 games in. They've already won four more games than they won through 36 games last year. So they're in a much better spot. I think, Seth, from what we've seen the last, really going back to the end of that Royals series, it's only three games, but it's the last three games. They've gone 7 runs, 8 runs, 6 runs. It hasn't been a huge power surge. There have been some home runs in there, but they've just gotten to start to hit a little bit more consistently. Yeah. Some of the guys that you expect to be hitting, who are going to hit at some point, Christian Walker and Yiner Diaz specifically the last couple of nights. I mean, Walker had just a rocket double to center field last night. Like, if they just get a few guys hitting each night in the lineup with the way the pitching's going, they're going to be fine.
And the way the pitching is going is right now the Astros have the fifth lowest ERA in Major League Baseball. This time last year, Hunter Brown looked like he did. Might not even be a good AAA player.
Literally had like a 15 ERA this time last year.
Yeah, and now it's he's emerged as one of the best pitchers in baseball so far this season. Yeah. But then they lead the league in WHIP. So, and that's the feeling you get. I'll take a low WHIP over a low ERA any day because it feels dominating. They don't put guys on base.
Right.
Largely. So that's very much sustained them. A lot of it, I guess the biggest questions about whether you can sustain it or not are that you still don't know a whole lot about guys like Gusto and Wisniewski. But so far, it's been very, very promising.
Well, and we'll see. And that dovetails perfectly into the other bit of news with the Astros, because maybe you don't have to rely on guys like Gusto and Wisniewski if Lance McCullers comes back.
Oh, play it, Ben.
Let's do it.
Yes.
Give it to me more. Jalen Reed would say that's sick. Let me give you the news. McCullers is throwing a bullpen. I can't remember if I put this in there last night as tomorrow, if it's today. I'll double check. He's throwing a bullpen here at some point in the next 24 hours or so. And then his next start could be with the Astros. He's put together some really good rehab starts of late. He's up into the 70s now in terms of number of pitches in his starts. This is great news.
Let's do it.
Today.
Yeah.
Yes, let's do it. Let's do the bullpen today.
Yes, let's do
it. Which is when they're going to do it.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Wait, today is Wednesday, right?
Today is Wednesday, yes.
Yes, he's doing it today.
Is he doing it today? Okay, good, good. Yeah, so I typed that last night. So, yeah, this is great, man. This is really good news. I know I'm already bracing myself. Can't count on Lance. He's going to get injured. How many starts till he gets injured? I don't know. But all I know is they're not rushing a ratchet bad version of Lance to get into the to get onto the big league club. He's not throwing 71 bad pitches in these starts. You know what I mean? He's not pain free throwing 71 pitches, but they don't look good. Like, the shape of his pitches are good. He's happy with how he's throwing it. The velocity is around where it needs to be. This would be, I'm a sucker for a story like this on teams that I like and people that I like, and I like Lance McCullers. I can't wait to see him get back with the Astros. I think it's a really, really cool story.
Forrest Whitley didn't do us any favors when it comes to living down to expectations, because Forrest Whitley came up, looked pretty damn promising when we saw him, and now he's injured again.
Yep. That's right. Yeah. Left knee sprain. Whatever. Rockets game 5 tonight. We'll talk about that more at the top of the hour. What's the world saying about Jalen Green's performance so far? We'll have that for you. As we mentioned in the previous segment, the Texans pick up an interior offensive lineman off waivers from the Patriots. Jake Andrews is his name. He's got ties to Cole Popovich, the Texans O-line coach from the year that Cole Popovich spent at Troy University. That's where Jake Andrews played. He's been in the league a couple of years. He was out all last season with a meniscus injury. Other news in the NFL, the Commanders are building a new stadium on the site where the old RFK Stadium is. For years, the Commander fans have hated the site where the FedEx Field, where it's in Virginia. Yeah. There's a lot of PTSD that Dan Snyder had a lot to do with that stadium, I would imagine. When you break up with somebody and all the places you used to go with them, you're like, well, I can't go there anymore. I hate that person. And it reminds
me of them. It's like their stepdad's old mansion or something.
Yeah, it reminds
Their mom was a money-grubbing hoe who married some rich dude that had a creepy old mansion, and then you had to live there for 20 years.
That's RFK.
And now it turns out, like, oh, actually, it turns out they lied to you. Your dad's actually been alive all these years.
Right.
You can go back to his house.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a better version of your dad. We're going to knock your dad over and build a better version of him.
Yeah,
that's what this is. So we're RFK, the old RFK Stadium, where all the great memories of Redskin football was. They're going to build it. Here's why I think this is interesting. It's a $4 billion project, which includes retail, restaurants, parking. The Commanders, who are owned by Josh Harris, who's a hedge fund multi-billionaire, owns the Sixers, the Devils, a soccer team, many, many other things. They are ponying up $2.7 billion of the $4 billion for this project. The Commanders are. And I just find that interesting because we're heading into a stadium decision era here in Houston. And we'll see what happens here.
John, you sound like you work for a team. You're like, you don't say they're expecting $1.3 billion of public money.
Well,
you say, hey, Washington's going to pay for $2.7 billion of
it. Okay, fair. The reason I bring that up is that the question is always going to be, if we build a stadium here, what's the split on this thing? I'm the McNairs, how am I looking at this? That's why I bring it up. I'm not a Josh Harris stan. I just want you to know that, even though I did get free tickets to a Devils game back a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I know. And there's two different ways you could have phrased that. You could have said, the Commanders are paying for $2.7 billion of this. Or you could say,
sorry I wasn't sticking up for big government, okay?
No, you wouldn't be sticking up for big government if you said $1.3 billion. You'd be saying, like, hey, look, boy, they want $1.3 billion from the government on this.
Oh, well, the government, the taxpayers are paying the other $1.3. That's what I meant. So,
yeah, I'm accusing you of sticking up for big government and waste. Yeah.
Oh, gotcha. I find that story interesting just because this is where the Texans are headed in a direction where something like this might be an option.
The Texans have a higher valuation, at least according to CNBC, than the Commanders. Mm-hmm. And these things are all just estimates and what have you, including they do claim that the Texans have a higher EBITDA, the earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization.
Profit.
Just think of it as profit.
Yeah.
They do claim that the Texans have a higher EBITDA than Washington.
Running a tight ship over there. I like it. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. We'll see. Yeah, we'll see what happens with that. Ultimately, a lot of these teams sell a sliver, not a lot, but the new approach has been sell a small part of the team to raise some cash, and there's your portion of the project, which is which will generate billions of dollars. Also, by the way, Frank Ross, John Carroll University Hall of Famer, named yesterday. I'm going to give him an acknowledgement right now because I like Frank
Acknowledge
Ross.
Me.
Good job, Frank Ross. It was a cool video on the Texans' social media of that last night. They've got a lot of John Carroll guys in the building over there. So that was a big deal over there yesterday.
Let's make it a controversy later. It's equivalent to whether Shedeur Sanders' jersey should have been retired.
Oh, should
you? You stick up for Frank Ross, and I'll say, what the hell is this? You're putting him in alongside whomever else.
Poke holes in the Frank Ross, John Carroll Hall of Fame debate. All right.
Yeah.
No debate here. Jalen Green has not been good in this series with the Warriors. What are they saying about Jalen Green outside of Houston? And Kenny Smith had some advice for Jalen Green. How good is this advice? Should he take it to heart tonight against the Golden State Warriors? Game 5 tonight at Toyota Center. Early start, thank God. 6:30. It's tip-off tonight over at Toyota Center.